Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is Oklahoma Perspective. Tulsa Public Schools continue to grapple with a major budget shortfall next year. The district has been holding public meetings to get input on how to address the problem. Recently, KRMG's Russell Mills talked with TPS Superintendent Dr. Deborah Gist about the meetings and asked if there were any new ideas to come out of them.
Let's talk about the public meetings that have been going on about the fairly dire budget cuts that need to happen in the near future, the very near future. Mm-hmm. And how's participation? How's the feedback? How is the process going for you?
It's been a painful process because it's a painful topic, but it has definitely been valuable in the sense that Tulsans have come out. They have come ready to help work with us, and we're just really grateful for the engagement.
So what kind of ideas or feedback are you getting? Are people worried, concerned, dismissive? What's the ambiance been?
Oh, they're very, very concerned. So that ranges from just sharing concern and frustration to anger to real extreme sadness, tears. This is a very serious topic, and we all know that our schools have been doing far too more with too little for far too long, many decades in Oklahoma, and that is so much more challenging now than it was even in 2008 because we've cut so much to education. We're still $110 million less that we're spending on education than we were in 2008, and we have 50,000 additional students in the state. So this is a very serious issue. It's very challenging, and they recognize that. They know that we've already done too much, that we've already made too many reductions in our schools and with our team members, and that they see the effects of that, and they know it has to change.
So the process here is you're holding these public meetings, and I sat through sort of a simulation of part of that process where you sit down and kind of work out budget issues. I was confused by it because I added up the numbers and they didn't add up. There was this number at the bottom. It said $47. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at this column of figures and going, well, that's way more than $47. And if I added up everything except classroom size, that did not add up to the like $20 I was supposed to cut from the thing. So I was like, how do you even start this? I mean, are people, I mean, maybe it's just me being OCD, but are people confused by the process or do they seem to get where we're going?
No, we haven't had that. I don't know what the $47 that you're talking about. And, you know, it shouldn't add up because it's not, that's not how it works. And so what we have is a list of services. The amounts are modeled off of the actual dollars that we spend in education. So it's things like ratios of students to teachers, athletics, transportation, teacher professional development, the district office, and so forth. And then each of those has a dollar amount next to them that range from 25 cents to like $6 or $9 or something like that. And then the effort is to come up with $20 in savings. And that is mimicking the challenge that we have at the district level to come up with $20 million in reductions in the budget.
So I know we're still fairly early in the process and still have several meetings to go, but have you had a chance to collate any of the data that you have gathered from people or the feedback? And is there any kind of tendency or trend in what people are considering for cuts?
Mm-hmm. Well, we have not compiled it all yet. We have our last community meeting tonight, and then the survey closes on October 14th. And so we'll take all of that information, and we will then use all of that to develop a report about what we've heard from our community. I can definitely tell you that we have, you know, there are some themes. One theme that is not at all surprising to us is that people, the only thing people actually feel comfortable cutting is the district office, and that's pretty much on everyone's list. We understand that. It's on our list, too. We know that we need to start as far away from students and teachers as possible. I think what's challenging is, you know, for people to recognize, and when they do, they're surprised. They say, oh, I didn't realize that the district office means the custodians and the maintenance workers and the people who manage the wireless and keep the computers working and the bus drivers and the, you know, the people who fix the air conditioning and, you know, all these really, really important jobs, which are the vast majority of people at the district office. And so then when, you know, we start to look at the specifics there, it gets a little bit more challenging. But we do all know we have to start with as much as we can do to protect students and teachers from feeling the effects of this. But the reality is that we have cut so much for so long and so deeply that there is really no way to manage this in a way that doesn't affect every single part of our system.
So I know that in recent years, Project Schoolhouse and other things that the district has tried to consolidate a little bit, tried to shed itself of unneeded or redundant properties or functions. And I'm guessing that we're about out of options on that front too, but is there any property out there that's maybe not being used to its full capacity or that could possibly, you know, be sold off or transferred or so? I'm sure that this has already been considered, but I'm just curious if any real estate's involved in this decision.
I wouldn't say real estate is involved, but we're definitely looking at whether or not we're making smart choices about the use of our buildings and taking a look at small schools and enrollment numbers and utilization of buildings and that type of thing. We're definitely taking a look at that because we're taking a look at everything. So it is, along with everything else, being carefully examined. You know, the challenge about property values. I mean, we definitely do that when we have a property that we don't need and we don't anticipate that we might need in the future, because you have to keep that in mind too, that we have sold them. In fact, we sold one this year. It is important to do that because it's an asset of the district's and that's a good thing. However, there are two issues with it that relate to this budget challenge. One is that selling a piece of property is a one-time source of revenue and doesn't help us with the structural deficit. And then the second issue is that when we sell a building that has been built by and or, you know, enhanced by bond dollars, that those dollars cannot be used in the operational budget, which is the budget that we're experiencing the deficit in. They have to go back into the bond, which is good and which helps us, you know, keep our buildings safe and healthy and dry and educationally conducive, but it doesn't help us with the challenge at hand.
Understood. Okay. One other thing I wanted to ask you about real quick was the update, I guess, to the registration process and trying to simplify it and consolidate that a little and just make parents' lives easier in general. And I'm sitting here thinking about a family where they've got one kid who's in high school, one kid who's in middle school, one kid who's a special needs student. And up to now, that has been sort of a marathon for them to get all those kids registered and know the different deadlines and target dates and, you know, the head spins. But Tulsa has been working on that issue, yes?
Yes. And I can only imagine for families with multiple children. My niece has been living with me, and we were working on hers. And, you know, I had to create like a little table to keep it all straight because there were so many deadlines and so many applications and so many procedures. And then you would find out about one before the other one was due and all of this. And it was confusing. And so we'd heard that feedback from parents over the years, and then I experienced it firsthand with my family. And so we know it's a problem, and we're very excited about this move and creating a process with one deadline and one application, and in a way that we hope will not only make it more streamlined and more clear for families, but also gives us a chance to promote our neighborhood schools, of which we have such really wonderful choices that people don't always realize it's a really great choice, and they sometimes go straight to some of the other schools of choice without even considering their neighborhood school, which actually may be a better choice for their child.
Is this also partially an effort to try to boost enrollment?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, if we make the process for enrolling in our schools hard, and if we don't give people adequate information about our schools, and we don't tell our stories and show people all the really great programming and really wonderful things that we have to offer in our schools, then it shouldn't be a surprise that people are not choosing our schools. And so this is definitely work that we are doing to turn that around.
And I mean, let's call it what it is, that declining enrollment does not help with the budget issue because
for sure.
Right?
That's right. Yeah. I mean, when I was in Tulsa Public Schools in the 1970s, we had twice as many students as we have now. And so we have been losing enrollment for many decades. And we know that we have to turn that around. And we know that we have great schools to offer people. And we know that we have a beautiful city that people want to live in and do live in. And they ought to know that their neighborhood schools and schools by their homes are great places for their children to attend.
TPS Superintendent Dr. Deborah Gist. One of the main sources of school funding in the state is from the gaming compact between the state government and the native tribes that run casinos in Oklahoma. That compact expires next year, and Governor Kevin Stitt wants to renegotiate it. KRMG's Russell Mills talked with the executive director of the Oklahoma Gaming Association, Sheila Morago, about the tribe's position on renegotiation.
There's been speculation that with a recent Supreme Court decision sort of loosening the restrictions on sports betting, that could be a factor in Oklahoma in the near future. And specifically at Indian gaming places, casinos and what have you. And your answer to me, I think, kind of surprised me. But again, this is not my wheelhouse. I don't know that much about this industry. So your response was pretty much a flat no, not happening, at least not soon. Can you kind of explain?
Currently we are in a little bit of push and pull with the governor on the aspects of the renewal of the compact. The tribal leaders at this point, in a letter written to him, where 30 tribes have now signed that in unity, that they believe that the compact's renewed and that they are more than willing to talk to him about the two aspects in the compact that are up, that can be discussed, but that nothing else at this point will be discussed until those portions of it are taken care of. So as far as sports betting, it's not like it's not ever going to happen. But until we get through this particular portion, it's not anything that is currently on the radar screen for us.
For our listeners and for myself, to be perfectly honest, who have only a vague understanding, can you kind of explain what these compacts are?
A compact is basically a contract, if you will, but it's a government to government agreement between two sovereigns, dictating terms of an agreement. So for this, federal law says that in order for us to have class 3 gaming and table games and other things that we currently have in Oklahoma since 2004, that we have to come to an agreement and enter into an agreement with the state for that. And so that, if you were around, was passed by a vote of the people. I believe it was question 712 in 2004, and it passed by, I believe, 60%. And that was basically the offer from the citizens of Oklahoma to the tribes about class 3 gaming. So currently, that's where it stands. It's been in effect for 15 years. And if you read the fair sort of, you know, just plain language of the compact, you will understand that if we can discuss revenue sharing and we can discuss exclusivity, but those are the only two portions of the compact that are up for discussion per this particular compact. And if we don't come to an agreement, then we are in full agreement and believe that the law is on our side, that those compacts will renew for another 15 years.
So what specifically is the bone of contention at this point between the governor's office and the Native American tribes, or can you speak to that?
He truly believes that the compact terminates completely at the end of this 15-year term, and that he would like to sit down and renegotiate all the parts of the compact. We don't believe that that is what it says in the current compact, and we just want to make sure that we abide by the terms of, that agreement, and he does too.
And is it, I mean, contentious? Is it fairly friendly conversation at this point, or how would you characterize the negotiations?
We're not currently in negotiation at all. It's just been letters back and forth.
Ah, fair enough. And when does the current compact expire?
It is the term of this current compact ends January 1, 2020. And as I said, we know that at the end of that, it extends for another 15 years.
Okay, so the clock's ticking one way or the other to either have an agreement or possibly, and I don't know if this is even a possibility, but you know, maybe end up in court, and this would be a federal case, obviously, because
that is not in our thought process. If that's something the governor would like to do, then that's up to him.
I'm guessing neither side would prefer that. I mean, I'm sure everybody would much prefer to just deal with this on our own and not get the federal courts involved, because that just complicates and slows everything down.
I would agree.
I don't know. Is tobacco part of the compact, or is that a separate compact?
No, that's a separate one. So
okay.
Things like gasoline, tobacco, again, those are compacts, agreements between two sovereign nations. That's
gotcha.
Why they're called that.
All right. So getting back to the topic du jour and just making sure I understand what you're
betting.
Saying. Yes, the sports betting. The basic feeling among the tribes, you said 30 tribes signed the most recent letter, is
yes.
That, you know, we want this settled. We want, you know, we're willing to negotiate these two items, or at least discuss these two items, because that's what can be discussed. Our understanding of the agreement is that's what is on the table for discussion. Nothing else is. And until
exactly.
We get all that sorted and ink on paper, we're not going to talk about the possibility of sports betting.
At least not right now. I think that, you know, that is a pretty big chunk to bite off. And once that is settled, then we can start talking about different forms of gaming opportunities.
Are the tribes even interested? I mean, do they see this as a, you know, potentially lucrative, you know, form of gaming, or are they? It's something we could offer. You know, wouldn't hurt us, but it's not exactly a cash cow like some people might think.
You hit the nail right on the head. It's always nice to have other gaming options for our customers. That is not up for debate. Everybody wants the newest and greatest things that are available, and that's the new choice du jour since the repeal of PASPA. But you know, in reality, it is an amenity. It does not bring all that much money down to the bottom line, but it does, you know, give our customers some options of having some quality entertainment. So, and everybody wants that.
Sheila Morago, the executive director of the Oklahoma Gaming Association. Special thanks to KRMG's Russell Mills for the interviews. This is Oklahoma Perspective for Cox Media Group. I'm Bert Williams.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.